You have to set up this structure. You have to have everything predictable and consistent. As you're developing some rules, you have to create and develop the rules with them. And each rule you develop, you have to make sure you talk about why that rule is important.
Welcome to the Honestly Adoption Podcast, a show about adoption, foster care, advocacy, and becoming the best caregiver possible. Pull up a chair. We're glad you've joined us. Here's your host, Mike Berry.
Friends, welcome back to the Honestly Adoption Podcast. We are so glad you're joining us from wherever in the world you're joining us. We are kicking off a brand new season. We're in season 27. Wow, that's just amazing that we have already produced 27 seasons of this show. And you're joining us for episode 236. If this is your first time joining us, you can always visit honestlyadoption.com/podcast to get caught up on past episodes, past seasons, and also browse the resources that we create at the Honestly Adoption Company. We're all about helping you become the best caregiver possible. So we have loads of resources over at honestlyadoption.com. Here's what we're doing for the beginning of this brand new season. We're airing a special four-part series called FASD Expert Spotlight. Here's why we're doing that. Back about a month and a half ago, we aired an episode with our good friend Susan Ellsworth from the Indiana Alliance for Prenatal Substance Exposure. And since then, we've received a lot of questions. In fact, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders always gets a lot of questions. There's a lot of mystery around it, and we are thankful to be partnered with some world-renowned experts who are leading voices, thought leaders, trainers, teachers, when it comes to understanding fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, but also helping you, the caregiver, become the best caregiver possible for your child. And that begins by understanding. And so for the next 4 weeks, we are airing this special series called FASD Expert Spotlight. And we're going to air some interviews that we did on some podcasts, and then also some interviews that we shared on our personal podcast. So you're going to hear you're going to hear some really great conversations, but we're also going to be sharing and pointing you towards some really valuable podcasts from some amazing leaders in the FASD community. So we're excited to air that. In this very first episode, we're sharing a previously unreleased recording, actually unpublished recording, at least for this podcast, that I did a couple of years ago with Dr. Ira Chasnoff, who is a good friend of ours, but also world-renowned, probably the world-renowned expert when it comes to fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And we had a discussion about the online world and FASDs. How do you navigate the online world, which is already, we know, a vortex, a vacuum? How do you navigate that with children, with people who have an FASD? And I mean, it was a great conversation. You will love this conversation I have with Dr. Chasnoff. He is a wealth of knowledge. This interview was just it. I couldn't write notes fast enough as a caregiver. So you're gonna love it, and it really answers a lot of questions that we as caregivers are dealing with when it comes to this current culture, this current world when it comes to the internet and internet safety and all of that. We also talked a little bit about his book, FASDs and the Online World. And we'll link all of that in the show notes. You don't have to worry about keeping up with me. You can click the show notes and the links will be there. But listen, we are glad you're joining us. And if you are brand new to the show, again, like I said, welcome to you. Make sure you jump over to our podcast website, honestlyadoption.com/podcast, and get caught up on our resources, past episodes, all of that. And hey, listen, jump over to Apple Podcasts, jump over to Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're all over the place. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. We would love that. That helps. That just pushes those algorithms into the stratosphere and gets this show out to more people. Guys, thanks for being here. And now on with my interview with Dr. Ira Chasnoff. Excited to welcome back a very dear friend of mine that we have done a lot of interviews together over the years, Dr. Ira Chasnoff from NTI Upstream. And today we're in this particular interview, we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic, and that is fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and the online world, which is also the title of his latest book, FASD in the Online World. So Ira, welcome back.
Thanks. It's always fun talking with you.
Yeah. And actually this is a topic that I've been excited to talk to you about really since I heard about your latest book, FASD in the Online World. And so I really want to start right out of the gate. On these interviews in particular, we've talked about FASDs with you. I've had that conversation with you and helping parents formulate strategies to better parent their children. And then I've also had experts talk about internet safety and the online world. But now we're blending these two topics together. So why are these two topics, FASD and the online world, in tandem, why are they so important?
Well, because both, you know, the common denominator between FASD and the internet, especially social media, the common denominator is the brain. Many of members of your audience have heard me talk about the effects of alcohol on the developing fetal brain. And then we're going to, as we talk today, we're going to pair that against the brain basis of social media and how it was designed. And that's the common thread. It all comes down to the brain.
Yes. And we were talking offline. I really want you to get into this. We were talking, you talked about, brain functionality, what I would call the pleasure center. That's not the official term for it, but we were talking about that, and you were mentioning how the developers of social media, how they have become successful, or the online space in particular has become so successful. So let's get into that a little bit, because I think what you said was really intriguing to me, and I was feverishly scratching out notes here, but I'll just let you explain. I'm going to step out of the way and let you explain that, sure. Because I think that's a really fascinating thing for parents to hear.
Okay. When it comes to the brain, for all of us, but especially for teenagers, just adolescents in general, the two key brain functions that propel online use are pleasure and relationships. Now, pleasure, the part of the brain responsible for making us feel good about things, to feel pleasure, is called the prefrontal cortex. And it's way up in the front part of the brain, and it releases dopamine. Dopamine is the pleasure center of the brain. And so anything you can do that releases dopamine gives you pleasure. On the other hand, the other aspect of brain functioning that's important for all of us, but especially for adolescents, is relationships. You know, we as humans are always looking for connections. And one of the main hormones produced by the brain, and this is produced by the midsection of the brain called the hypothalamus, but the hypothalamus produces oxytocin. And oxytocin is the cuddle hormone. It's what makes you want to connect to people. And when you do connect to people, more oxytocin flows. So how are those affected, those two centers of the brain, affected by prenatal alcohol exposure? That's the first question. So the difficulty when alcohol is used by the pregnant woman, especially early in pregnancy, often before she even knows she's pregnant, its main target is the limbic system, the midsection of the brain. And the limbic system is kind of at the core, and that it transmits information that we receive from the environment. It transmits information up to the prefrontal cortex, as well as the limbic system contains organs on its own. So in short, the way alcohol affects this process, the first is it affects the limbic system's, alcohol use early in pregnancy can affect the limbic system's ability to transmit information, to get information up to that prefrontal cortex in order for dopamine to flow, for dopamine to be released. So it disrupts, it takes more stimulation to get that pleasure center fired off. The second thing is it affects the limbic system directly, especially what we're talking about today, the hypothalamus. So it can affect the release of oxytocin. Now, what does that come down to? In order to get dopamine released, the adolescent with FASD is looking for significant information from the environment so that information can be fed up to the prefrontal cortex. And in addition, the adolescent is looking for relationships. Mm-hmm. Now,
That's okay.
Now we have to talk about, well, how does alcohol exposure affect relationships? And I think this comes down to the issue of communication. So think about communication now. What is communication? There are three components to expressing ourselves verbally. One is speech. And speech is the actual sound that we make. It's the words, the spoken language we use. The next step is language itself, which is a whole system of verbal information and symbols. And so it's written, but language also includes reading body cues, facial cues, body language. So that's part of language, is not only being able to produce sounds in a coherent way, but also to read information that's coming back in response to those sounds you're making. Communication, then, is the process of transferring all of this information so that the individual can use it and respond appropriately. Mm. So there's speech, there's language, and then there's putting it all together. And that's where teens with FASD really have difficulty. This is called adaptive functioning. The ability to take what you know and utilize it in the fulfillment of daily tasks. So communication is, for example, knowing when you're talking to someone what distance to keep so that you don't walk up to somebody and invade their space. Mm-hmm. Communication is all about understanding sarcasm and being able to understand symbolism. So one of the examples I always use is a young lady that we were working with when we were making our film Moment to Moment about young adults with FASDs. Our film crew was out filming in her home one morning and before school, and then the film crew started packing up and they said, okay, we'll be back at 2 o'clock to film some more. And this young lady, who's 22 years old, has an IQ of 125, said 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, one would think, oh, she's a teenager, you know, she's being sarcastic, she's just, but this is actually a very real question for her, because what parents often talk about, common sense, mm-hmm. teens with FASD lack common sense. And that's all part of communication, taking speech, language, combining it for a communication system. Now, think about the teen with FASD who's having trouble in their peer relationships. For example, the young lady I'm talking about, her friends say, let's get together at 4 o'clock and we'll have a study break together. And this young lady says 4 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, her peers might laugh that first time and say, oh, you're such a card. Of course, you know, we're going to meet at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They'll brush it off. But the next time, she now becomes weird. And that's these issues in communication are one of the difficulties the teens have in keeping social relationships. So think about the teen now with FASD. Online, they don't have to worry about understanding sarcasm. They don't have to understand social distance. They don't have to read facial expression. They don't have to read body language. It's all right there in black and white, right on the screen.
Yeah.
Now, that's the advantage, and that's why they feel so much more comfortable. It has a flip side, though. There, you know, teens will express sarcasm. They will online. They will make outlandish jokes online. But the teen with FASD is going to take that information literally. They don't know how to walk that gray back and forth. Everything is black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they are so susceptible to being victims online. It's also why they're so susceptible to being perpetrators online, because they don't quite understand the meaning of their words. So communication is all one area.
Yeah.
Did you want to ask a question now?
Because I've got to go to something. Yeah. Hold that thought, because the big question I have, as you mentioned a little while ago, those interpersonal relationships, and I think this pretty much goes along with the communication and the interpersonal relationships. I'm thinking about several of our clients who have come to us over the last several months and said, my child just does wildly inappropriate things in relationships. Has one person in particular talked about their teenage son who could not handle himself out in the neighborhood, could not handle himself over using a cell phone or over social media. It was almost like it was a social disconnect. So my question is, how do we as parents, because I'm parenting a child like this too. How do we as parents, I don't even know how to ask this question. It's such a big question. Like, how do we help our children who have an FASD, how do we help them make those appropriate social connections, or help explain to them when there is a social disconnect that they're not understanding? That's a huge question, I know.
That might be a whole different discussion, but let me try to just answer that relatively briefly. You, as a parent of a child with FASD, you are going to spend your life being their external brain, and it may be they're never going to be able to get out socially independently. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is that the prefrontal cortex that helps govern a lot of this does reach full maturity by about, the late 20s, so between 26 and 30 years of age. So we do see a change in a lot of the children with FASD around ages 26 to 30 years, because the prefrontal cortex is coming into play now. So the prefrontal cortex, the dopamine, actually has two roles. And I didn't mention this earlier because I didn't want to get this too confusing, but you have forced me to now, so I will do it. The other role of the prefrontal cortex is regulation. It's the regulatory center of the brain. So that's connecting consequences with behavior. That's decision-making. And we were going to get into this in just a moment, but so I'll just give you an easy example. Many of our kids with FASD get treated for ADHD. Mm-hmm. And they, in fact, do have ADHD. Didn't you see the car coming? And they saw the car coming. I just didn't think it would get there the same time I would. So I went for it. Now, what they're telling you is that they saw the car. But in order to get that image up to the prefrontal cortex, that information has to pass through the limbic system.
Yeah.
And if there is damage to the limbic system, that information isn't getting up there. So you don't regulate your behavior. So the other aspect of all of this, as we talk about how do we manage our kids online, the other aspect is we have to have a very clear structure and guidance for internet use.
Yeah.
Speaking to our specific topic today. Now, how do we teach them socially? That's a whole other big issue, and yeah. I'm not sure we have time to get to that today.
We'll have to definitely schedule another follow-up yeah. conversation. Like, I'm thinking, man, that is a whole other topic. Yeah. But yeah, continue. Yeah.
But there's no easy answer for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me go back. Let me get back on track here. So let's talk about now the three factors we've talked about that are important in understanding internet, especially social media use and misuse by teens with FASD. Number one, they want relationships. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're looking for relationships. Number two, they're seeking pleasure, they're seeking rewards. And number three, they have very poor regulatory behaviors. Mm-hmm. So decision making, understanding the consequences of what they do on the internet, it's just not there. And even if you try to lecture them and teach them and say, if you say, come over to my house to a stranger and give them your address, if you tell them, don't do that because a stranger is going to show up at our house and may harm us, connecting the action with the consequence doesn't necessarily work. So that's number one, the regulation problems. Number two, as I said, they're looking for relationships. They are human just like all of us. Mm-hmm. And they have this need for relationships. And, you know, finding relationships on the internet, it's just so much easier for these young people. Mm-hmm. And then number three, they're looking for rewards. They're looking for pleasure. So if somebody likes them, if somebody gives them positive feedback online, then that's going to trigger those dopamine receptors that they have trouble triggering, and it's going to feel good. And it's the same thing with any kind of reward system. Now, the developers of the internet, especially the developers of social media, knew this, not just for teens and not just for young people with FASD, but for all of us. Yeah. So they created what is known in the business as the compulsion loop. And the compulsion loop is the design of social media to stimulate oxytocin and dopamine, because the developers of social media know that if they can stimulate oxytocin and dopamine, they can promote ongoing online activity. And the more online activity they have, of course, the more they make in ad sales for that particular. So that's how they get us hooked. And I've been talking a lot about social media, but the other aspect of this is gaming. Mm. And this is just like going to Las Vegas. And if you've ever done the slot machines are designed to be random, because what research has shown, and this goes all the way back to Skinner, back in the 1930s, wrote about this. If you reward someone every time they try a task, it's not as effective as randomly rewarding them. Yeah. So in other words, when you pull the lever on the slot machine, and what you get is a burst of dopamine waiting to see if you get the reward. And if it doesn't line up, you know, the three jackpots, then the dopamine falls. But you still got that powerful cue, that powerful dopamine surge, just by trying. And you do it again and again until you actually get the jackpot lined up. And what happens is you get not only the when you pull the lever, you get that dopamine excitement, but then when you get the reward, you get even a higher stimulation of dopamine. And so that's the way games are designed online. They make it difficult enough that you're seeking, and you keep seeking positive reinforcement by doing something. And what does that do? That drives you compulsively to keep going. So that's why our teens are with FASD are so susceptible.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this interview with my good friend, Dr. Ira Chasnoff. Listen, I wanted to jump in here real quick and basically shout out to all of my foster adoptive dads who are listening, or if you are a spouse and you are married to or connected to or friends with a foster adoptive dad, I'm also shouting out to you. Join us, dads, join us for Road Trip 2022. In the mountains of Colorado Springs this coming fall, October 3rd through the 5th, 5th through the 8th. It's going to be an amazing time. It's basically 3 days of conversation, getaway, adventure designed by foster adoptive dads for foster adoptive dads. You can learn more at roadtripdads.com. And listen, right now, when you register for Road Trip, we are giving away some really special bonuses. In fact, we've never given away bonuses when you register for Road Trip. And right now, until September 1st, we are giving away access to Trauma Knowledge Masterclass, our premier course on understanding trauma, disrupted attachment, behavior response. We're giving free access to that, free Oasis community for a year, and a signed copy of our book, Securely Attached. You get all of it. It's a $637 value when you register for Road Trip by September 1st. That's right. September 1st is coming up in just a little over a month. You don't want to miss this exclusive bonus opportunity. We've never given away bonuses when you sign up for Road Trip, but we're doing this now, and we're giving away, man, some amazing bonuses. So don't miss out on your opportunity. Visit roadtripdads.com to save your spot today. And listen, if you are a spouse and you know your guy needs to get to the mountains of Colorado, sign him up. Sign him up. We've had lots of spouses do that over the years. And listen, there's never been any regrets for coming up the mountain and hanging out with us for a couple of days. Again, that's roadtripdads.com. And now back to the show. Tell me how this lines up, but I'm thinking about the child who continues to pursue those relationships that are toxic. So we're bringing it back into the physical real world. So the child with an FASD who pursues the relationships that are toxic, I'm using that actually a real life example. Just as you talk about like how game systems and how the online world is, they've designed it to not always reward, you know. And there's a lot of different examples I could use there, but I'm thinking about it this in more of like the physical real life world that our kids live in, with the relationships that they pursue that may, you know, it's the kid in the neighborhood who may like throw him a bone and hang out with him for a while, but then the next 5 or 6 days totally reject them. And all the while parents are standing by saying that person doesn't want to be friends with you. Oh yes, they do, mom and dad. Yes, they do. And I don't know if this is a question, just a statement, but it translates over to the same thing that happens in the online world, where 5 days in a row, our child is being rejected by this kid in the neighborhood, keeps pursuing. And then there's that one day where that child may be bored or whatever it is and decide to throw our kid a bone and hang out with him. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what the question is there, but it is.
I know what the question is.
I'll let you take it right there. You make sense out of my madness.
Okay. Your question really is about toxic relationships.
Okay.
And to answer this, I think I would give you an example that moves away from teens and moves away from FASD. And let's just look at the issue of domestic violence.
Okay.
People always ask, why do women stay with someone who's beating them? And if you examine these relationships, what you find is that they can be treated, the woman can be treated horribly, both physically and emotionally. But then there are those occasional random times when there is a loving relationship, usually with adults in this situation expressed through sexuality. So the battered woman sticks with her perpetrator because she's looking for those instances in which she really does feel loved. And then oxytocin flows, the dopamine flows, and it makes up for all the bad times. And so this is the compulsion loop. You can apply this idea of the compulsion loop to just about anybody. Now, we're bringing it back to our teens with FASD, they don't often, because they don't understand sarcasm, they don't understand often, they can't read anger, they can't read hostility. They only hear the words. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another example. I had a young lady that was expelled from school. She was one of our patients, and she's 14, and she was expelled from school for starting a fight. And here's literally what happened. She was talking to her friend at school, another girl, same age, and they were just talking, and the young lady, I'll make up a name just so make it Sarah. So Sarah was talking with her friend, and Sarah said something, and her friend said, "Oh, you're bad." Now, in the language of teens, bad means good. You know, that's a sign, "Oh, you're bad." But Sarah didn't take it that way. Her good friend was telling her she was bad, and so Sarah hauled off and slugged her. And then, of course, they got into a fight. Sarah had started it, and Sarah was expelled. And it's that same thing. They just hear the words. And often, even they hear selective words. And so they get themselves into situations. The most difficult cases that are brought to me are cases either via the internet or in-person kinds of cases, where it's hard to tell if the young person with FASD who got into an inappropriate sexual relationship, it's a fine line between being the victim and the perpetrator. And our kids with FASD don't know how to walk a fine line. So we end up in court trying to help the court walk the fine line and understand the thinking of this young person before the judge.
Yeah. And I can, we try to be personal with our own story, with our members and our audience and everything. And I can say that what you just said, we are smack in the middle of personally with one of our children. And it's very, very difficult. You know, I think where we've been as parents and where a lot of our parents are is we have the child who is in that compulsion loop. We have the child who has no social awareness. Talking about boundaries or talking about what does a parent do with the compulsion loop? What does a parent do with the child who is so obsessed with the online, with Snapchat or TikTok or all these other areas that kids are into, or gaming? We have some serious gamers who would stay on video games all day long. So how does a parent step into that, and what do healthy boundaries look like? What do we need to do to create healthy boundaries?
Okay, so here's where we get into the topic of how do we protect our teens? Let me say, first of all, although we're talking about protecting teens, it has to start long before the teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I encourage parents to start setting up their rules and guidelines for their home and for their teen's use by 8 or 9 years of age. If you start then, it's going to be much easier as the child gets older. But given that many families are already in the teen years and facing these problems, these strategies I'm going to talk about will work also. They're just harder to implement.
Okay.
So how do we set up guidelines and a structure for our teens regarding the use of the internet? First of all teens, and especially those with FASDs, need three basic elements from their parents: structure, predictability, and consistency. So you have to develop a structure so that the child knows what to expect, so that it is then very predictable and consistent. If you vary from this structure you set up, you're asking for trouble. Mm-hmm. And I have parents that are very well-meaning. I'll go back to our film Moment to Moment. One of the scenes in the film is our young lady, her name is Kara. So Kara, remember, is 22 years old, has an IQ of 125, is in her second year of college, living at home with her mother and younger sister. Kara does, in fact, have falls within the FASD spectrum. And there's a scene where Kara is just falling apart. She, you know, earlier in the movie, she's talking and she's a lovely young lady and very verbal and bright. But then there's a scene where she's just falling apart and crying, and the mother can't console her and can't figure out what's going on. But what had happened is Kara's mother is very, she's been working with us since Kara was about 3 years old. So she has taken all of our guidance and guidelines and has really structured her home. And her so one of the things she's done is she created a calendar. And so every activity of the family for each month is on that calendar. And if you look at the Fridays, every Friday, Kara, her sister, and her mother go for ice cream. And that's on the calendar every Friday. Well, it happened that Kara came home on a Thursday and found out that her mother and younger sister had gone for ice cream because the younger sister had accomplished something important at school. I forget what it is, but something really good had happened. And Kara found out, she absolutely fell apart. Not because she didn't get ice cream. That had nothing to do with it. It's because they went for ice cream on a Thursday instead of a Friday, because they were going to go the next day. Kara would get her ice cream. But That's how this is kind of a two-edged sword. And so you have to set up this structure. You have to have everything predictable and consistent. As you're developing some rules, there's a process. You have to, especially if your child's already in the teen years, you have to create and develop the rules with them. And each rule you develop, you have to make sure you talk about why that rule is important. Now, will the child retain that information? Probably not. But you have to have that discussion constantly. Make sure the rules are serve a purpose. You don't want any more than, at the very most, 6 rules. And they have to be stated very clearly and specifically and concretely. You can't say, for example, no internet use before dinner. That doesn't mean anything to a child with FASDs. You have to say, here are the hours that you may use the internet. Okay? The rules should be stated in positive terms. Don't say, do not... I'm trying to think of something. Do not use the internet after 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Rather, you have to say you may use the internet between 5 and 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So see how that's stated in positive terms. The rules have to be relatable to what goes on, very real about what happens in your family. So for instance, using this time example again, if you have dinner every night at 6 o'clock, then you have to decide where internet use figures in. And you have to keep going over the rules on a regular basis. And it's not a bad idea when you're starting out that if you say, for example, internet use is between 4:30 and 6, and then 7 and 8, every time the child goes to use the internet, you need to reinforce the rule.
Right.
Oh, Susan, I'm really glad. And it has to be positive. Mm-hmm. Positive reinforcement is the only thing that works. Susan, I'm really glad I see that you're using the internet between 4:30 and 6. So, and you have to just keep going on and on. Now, this next one is really important, and parents start laughing when I talk about this. And as I wrote the book, I imagined the parent kind of putting the book down and saying, yikes, because before you can develop rules for your teen, you need to audit your own use of technology. You need to think about it. And so, you know, are you using your, let's just take your cell phone. I'm going to ask you, here's a few questions, Mike, you can answer these or not. And I'm hoping our parents at home that are listening to this can answer. So here are some questions for you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel a mild state of panic if you've lost your phone?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In a national study, 73% of adults say yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another question. Do you spend an average of 2 to 4 hours a day tapping, typing, swiping on your device?
I do. And part of that is that I run an online company, but the other part is I do it even outside of the work hours. So yes.
Yeah. Okay. See, those 2 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
You're touching your phone 2,600 times.
Wow.
Here's another one. Do you ever feel your phone vibrating in your pocket even when it's not there?
All the time. Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
This is, you know, the great majority of adults say yes.
Yeah.
And do you wish you spent less time on your phone, but find it's just really difficult to disconnect?
I absolutely do. You know, I have these delusions of grandeur, like when Christmas break gets here, I'm going to turn all technology off. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Well, it's that's why you've got to set some rules for yourself.
Yeah.
And all parents need to do this. And it's not easy. Now, the question I just asked you are when we talk about internet addiction. Now, you know, there's not a clear definition of internet addiction just yet. But these questions, the studies that develop these questions, these are the kind of questions we're asking people to try to start understanding addiction to cell phones. Mm-hmm. The great majority of adults answer yes to all of these questions.
Yeah.
And we are what's known as technology naive. And, but still, we are addicted to our phones. So the question comes up now, okay, how do we develop a plan for management of online access for our teams? The first thing we have to do is provide a structure. And the three elements you want to look at when you're providing structure for online use are place, time, and device. So think about where in your home will you allow access online. You do not want to set up a computer or a laptop in the child's bedroom where they can close the door. What are the times? We talked about time, how you fit it in and decide, and not only the time, the specific times, but how that time is to be used. So part of the time is set aside for homework, and part of the time is for games or pleasure, connection, social media, etc. And then the difficult thing for us to understand as technology naive adults is device. There are so many devices out there now. And we're going to have to develop this structure so that not only do we have the place and time, but what device may be used in that specific place and specific time. So those are the three things you have to think about for structure. I kind of laugh. My sons are all in their 40s, so we didn't have this when they were growing up, thank goodness. But my grandchildren, certainly, I have two of my granddaughters are 18 years old. And so when they turned 13, they got to get an email account. And so, of course, Grandpa, I got an email account too, because I could watch and see what was going on in their lives. And I had open access to their email accounts. And then after about a year or so, they just disappeared. And so I saw them. I said, I don't see you on email anymore. You don't use email anymore? And they just looked at me. They said, email? Nobody uses email. And of course, it's Snapchat and Instagram and all these other things.
TikTok, yeah. TikTok is the latest one. TikTok is one I really don't understand, because it is, first of all, I can say this because it's all parents that watch this, but it is probably the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. It's just videos of themselves. But yeah, as you were saying that, I'm like, oh, I know where this is going. Yeah. Email is outdated. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then, of course, when I said, oh, great, I'll just join. Oh, they said, oh, no, Grandpa, you're not getting into our. And so, you know, I leave it to their parents then.
Yeah.
I'll be quite honest. I would not want to be raising children right now. I think it was much easier in my day. Now, I know I sound like a boomer. I apologize.
No, but you know, you don't. I agree with you completely. One of the things that we have actually discovered, myself and Kristen, as we are raising, we have two senior daughters who are about to graduate high school. And as I look at teenagers and I've raised many teenagers now, and versus little kids, younger kids, younger than like 10 years old, my goodness, it was so much easier to raise little kids than it was to raise teenagers, because things change so fast.
Yeah,
I mean, we're exhausted trying to keep up with the technology. And we have to, because we're parents, number one, but number two, we're researchers and we're trainers. So we have to always be keeping up with trends, and it is actually taking the life out of us at times. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I agree with you completely. This is an exhausting generation to raise teenagers. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next step, after you've established the structure, you have to monitor. And when you monitor, it has to be all devices and all accounts. And in order to do that, you must know all the screen names and passwords for every one of your teen's accounts. And as you monitor all these devices, if you find an account that you don't have access to, that's an immediate grounds for shutting down all accounts. You have to be very clear about this. Now, most parents tell me, I don't have time to keep checking on my teen. And so, how often do I have to do it? And, you know, how do I just do this practically? Well, if you tell your teen, I'm going to check your accounts, all of your accounts, every Wednesday, I can assure you every Tuesday night, your teen will go online and erase all his histories. And so you're not going to be able to look to see where your teen has been exploring online. So there's something we call the bogus pipeline. And this is really the best way to do it for busy parents. You tell your teen, I'm going to check your accounts, every one of your accounts, once a week. And it can be on any day of the week, but I'm not going to tell you which day. So some weeks you check all the accounts on Monday, some weeks on Thursdays, but you vary it and you keep it random. And that's the best way to keep your teen honest. So the frequency is once a week through a bogus pipeline approach. Secondly, the extent, let them know you're going to search everything. You're going to go into every account. And if you find any accounts for which you do not have access, then everything's getting shut down. And then the expectations. And this is pretty important. What sites do you allow and what sites do you not allow? And of course, there's all sorts of software now that you can block a lot of sites. But let me tell you, teens, even teens with FASDs, know how to get around that software.
So true.
So, you have to let them know you expect to see everything all the time.
Yeah. I am absolutely 100% agree with you. In fact, I said this recently to my son who has an FASD. He referred to himself as stupid. And I said, oh, buddy, you are not stupid. And I proceeded to tell him all the things, all the sneaky things he's done that takes a very, very sharp mind. So I completely agree with you on that. Yeah, that's really, really good advice. Really good advice.
Yeah. Another point is you've got to communicate your expectations to other parents. Now, I share things about my family too. I was babysitting my grandchildren, the four oldest ones, and the oldest girls who are 18 now at the time were just turning 13. And my son and his wife don't even have a TV in their home, but they had access, you know, so we would watch online, we would watch movies through, you know, Amazon, through the streaming and all that.
Yeah. Kind of.
So I was staying with the four kids for a week, which is a whole other story, but see all the gray hair, that's where it comes from. So we have a lovely time. They're wonderful kids, but the 13-year-old girls, they're twins, to my mind as a grandparent, were completely inappropriate. Now, you know, they probably weren't, but they were a little too suggestive for me.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I said, where in the world did you see that? You don't even have TV. And they said, oh, we go to our friend's house. We watch MTV. So, you know, you've got to let other parents know what you expect and be very clear.
Yeah.
And if other parents don't agree to your expectations, then your kids aren't going over to their house.
Yeah.
It's just like gun safety. It's like drugs in the home. It's like any other risk factor. You have to be very clear as to your expectations.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this just recently. You know, I said, well, they've got two younger siblings. And I said, you know, what has been your experience? How do you make decisions as to what's right and what's wrong? And they said very clearly, it's what our parents expected. So as a parent, even with a parent with FASDs, you will be able to communicate through example and through actions, more than words, your expectations around sexuality, morality, ethical behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Such great stuff. We could go on. I could have you continue to teach, and maybe I think we need to create a different space where we have a longer presentation on all this, because I think this is really, really fascinating information for parents. Because I'm sitting here, you should see my notes right here as I've been listening to you, feverishly scratching things down, trying to keep up, because it really is, even in the time between recording this and releasing this, the technology will advance.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. But I thank you so much for taking time to do this, you know, out of respect for our members' time, for your time. Unfortunately, we have to cut it short, or we have to stop. But
I covered everything. Now, there's a lot more detail in the book.
Sure.
And and a lot, there's like several pages of guidelines and rules.
Yeah.
So,
thank you for listening to the Honestly Adoption Podcast, a resource courtesy of the Honestly Adoption Company. To learn more about us, visit www.honestlyadoption.com.